Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCBQ 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Okay, you're back in the House of Mystery, and I'm Al Warren, and of course joining me today is Julie Saab. How are you doing, Jule?
I'm absolutely great. Thank you, Al. How are you?
I am just wonderful.
Oh, that's you all over. Just wonderful, a wonderful person, inside and out.
Now I got called a lot of names on from that show just yesterday. I can't
Did
believe.
You?
Yeah, all these people are mad. Actually, it was one of Joe's show, and he had the author of The Cult of Trump on. Now the guy. He's written a ton of books, and he's been a deprogrammer, and he talks about mind control, and he's been doing this as a profession for 30 years. So his book was more of a comparison of people that follow Trump and kind of how they get right into it. So, and he called this book Cult of Trump, and of course now, so it was actually a pretty good interview, but my God, people get really upset.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
And were quite abusive, or?
Yeah. I got called a lot of names, and I can tell when they're British because they call me a dumb twat.
Not pronounced like that.
No, I know, but that shows you the... and now speaking of controversial, we're going to keep the controversy up, and also joining us today is... pretty big author. He's written a ton of books. We've had him on before. His new book is called Bat Masterson, and it's the first dreamer. Fred Rosen, thank you for being here.
Al, it's a pleasure, and I'm from the same section of Alabama that your co-host is from. where I came from, they called it Flatbush.
Oh. I'm so pleased you're keeping the controversy alive. Well done.
Yeah. Well, you guys sound a lot alike. I will say that.
We do. We could be siblings.
Yeah. I would. My God, you guys sound so alike. I don't know what to do. I just
twins.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not. It's not like you're from the UK or anything. So.
No. God forbid.
No, that's a terrible place. Fred, you wrote about Bat.
Sir.
Now, so what made you write about Bat?
Okay. This book, Al, it's been a lifelong dream to write it. And what happened was, when I was a child, I watched a TV series called Bat Masterson, starring an actor named Gene Barry. And at the very end of the show, when the title cards came on, the last title card said, based on the book by Richard O'Connor. And I can still remember sitting there shocked that, wait a second, this guy was real? Excuse me? Well, and I kept up that interest, okay? For some reason, there was something about this guy that really piqued my interest, and it kept going. And in the 70s, I found out that he had come to, and Bat Masterson had was known as an Old West gunfighter, the sheriff of Dodge City. He was a buffalo hunter, an Indian scout, an Indian fighter. And he comes to New York at the turn of the 20th century, Al, and he becomes a journalist like us. A journalist. And that's really where his biggest contribution comes in. And it also involves solving a major murder case. And I found all this stuff out over a period of years, but it wasn't until 2 years ago that I found out. I was just, you know what happens, you're online, you're researching, yeah, everybody can relate to this, you follow links, and somebody had posted that they were a married relative of him, of course, certain, you know, generations down the line, and that Masterson was an illegal immigrant. I went, what? So I did my research. And I pulled up all of his, in those days, you know, in those days, I think it was until the 1950s, when the census people would take the census, they would ask you where you came from, what state, what country. They don't do that now, you know. But he would always lie. And I was able to see that in his records, and of course the fact he never applied for U.S. citizenship. He came here in the early 1860s with his parents right across the Canadian border. Just rode across it. There was no wall or anything.
Oh. They need to build that wall. You don't want Canadians coming in.
Well, that was the thing, Al. See, you're joking, of course, but here's the thing. I mean, I joke, I felt, as I got into the research, okay, and mind you, the book has got, because I realize I'm on House of Mystery, I got 7 murders in here, okay, and I'll talk about those, you know, but what I'm getting at is that this guy had to lie his entire life about where he came from, and in the course of the research to the book, and this was good because you know how history can get a little bit boring, and that's why it's always good when you got a murder to break it up. But it turns out, okay, everybody's talking about what President Trump's policies are toward people at the southern border. Okay?
Right.
But what I didn't know until I did my research is, guess what? There's nothing new about a United States president discriminating against people who want to be immigrants.
Right.
It goes all the way back to Millard Fillmore. Holy moly. You know, I mean, and it just, you know, it blows me away. I mean, it just blows me away. And so that's why I decided when I wrote the book, I was going to keep it objective. I don't take any, you know, because look, you know, people are buying your book because you're an historian and I'm a true crime author, so got to keep accurate, you know, got to keep objectivity.
So why did he come from Canada to the U.S.? Like, what was the purpose of him coming up or coming down to the U.S.?
It's exactly the same situation as today coming up from the southern border, people of Hispanic origin. Masterson was born in Quebec, Canada, and his parents wanted to find a new life and a better life, and that's why they went across the border and in upstate New York and came right into New York. And this again is what's so fascinating to me is that while Masterson, of course, is associated with the Western United States, he spent his childhood in upstate New York, and then of course he spends his second act as a reporter in the theater district of New York. I mean, it's incredible stuff that way. But the most important aspect here is that when he got taken across the border by his parents, he was a child just like the kids are today. He had no choice. You know?
Yeah. So do you think they would have sent him back to Canada? They would have back then. That's kind of what they did, or
he would have if they had found out. Oh, not only I know it for he left a trail in his writing about that. Okay, and the most important piece of evidence he left was in 1906. President Theodore Roosevelt wanted to name him as the Marshal of the Oklahoma Territory. And he wrote this long refusal letter to the president, okay? And he was friendly with T.R. But something about it got me. You know, it was like this lengthy, it was a lot of BS. Okay, and it was unlike anything else he'd ever written, because I've read all his columns and so forth. What I'm getting at is he tells the president he won't take the job as Marshal of Oklahoma because some kid who wants to make his reputation would seek him out and wouldn't, he'd take one look at him as, you know, as a man in midlife, and he'd think, oh, who's this guy? And there'd be a gunfight, and Masterson would have to dispatch the kid. Well, he was lying. First off, he never told T.R. that he was an illegal alien, number one, because the thing is, when you appoint somebody as a federal marshal, you got to go before the United States Senate for approval. And Masterson knew that if he did that, he'd never get out of there. He'd get out of there in cuffs. They would have deported him back to Canada in a heartbeat. The evidence is all there. That was one of the things that I looked up, but discovered, and as well as the other things, murder cases that he worked on. The murders were interesting now.
Well, so how did he get into murders? Like, so what was his basic history? He was a gunfighter, or what did he do exactly before journalism?
Great question. He starts out, okay, in those days, a lot of immigrants were buffalo hunters because it was the kind of dirty work that Americans didn't want to do. So that's what happened. He and his brother became buffalo hunters. And then after that, he became a scout for the cavalry. And he wound up as a quote unquote Indian fighter, it's a strange definition, because what in this particular case what happened was he was part of a group of buffalo hunters in Texas that were trying to take buffalo, you know, kill, they were killing the buffalo, which of course is killing the Indians' way of life. See, that was a deliberate thing our government did. Our government decided to employ these buffalo hunters to kill buffalo so the Indians wouldn't have them, because they supplied the Native Americans with a source of food and clothing. So the idea was kill off the buffalo. Well, so eventually, through working on the prairie, on the Kansas prairie, he wound up going to Dodge City, and that's where he wound up going into law enforcement with a guy that became his good buddy, Wyatt Earp.
Mm. So, wow.
I know. It's like, and that's where the murders start. Well, pretty much.
So was he like on that TV show they had about him with Gene Barry?
Yes,
now they made him look like he was pretty sophisticated, well groomed, dressed, well spoken. He was also very good with the gun, but he was very upright, like he didn't take life for granted. So now, was all of that true, how they portrayed it?
That's what turned out to be so friggin' amazing. Did I just say friggin' on the radio?
Yeah. It's better than the other word.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah, that part of it was totally accurate. He dressed almost exactly the way that you saw Barry dress. The big difference between Masterson in real life and in the TV show is that in the TV show, he uses a cane as sort of a fashion tool, and then, of course, as something he prefers using to the gun. Well, in real life, Masterson had been wounded in a gunfight and needed a cane to get around for a while, and he still had pain his whole life, so occasionally he used it to get around, but also he would use it to subdue bad guys. That's all. That part of it is true. I don't know how, you know, if he was as good with it as Barry was, but he certainly was very, very good with that. And of course, he was one of the fastest and most accurate guns in the Old West. That's all accurate. But he made a very good point, which is, he valued life. He was not a killer. Yes, he was in a situation in the course of his life where he killed three men, and he wounded a fourth who died from the wound. But it was all self defense. It was the situation he was in. You know, it's the same as a cop being shot at. No difference. Same thing. But that's where, see, that experience is, and of course, a lot of other cases in Dodge City where he dealt with outlaws. Oh, there's one point in the book where I almost dropped when I found this out. Frank and Jesse James show up in Dodge City. That was pretty, you know, that got me. But he gets involved. This is really the central true crime facet of the book, and I did this for all of our readers, and also because it's so damn interesting. There was a murder. Called upstate New York. Should I define upstate New York for the listeners?
Yeah, sure. Give us a little rough one on that.
Okay, here's the thing, folks. New York City is in the lower part of New York State. Upstate New York, it's way up. It's closer to the Canadian border. Well, what happens is, in 1906, there's a murder that occurs. Now, in a place called Herkimer County, which, again, central New York, the location is Big Moose Lake, and I got a picture of it in the book. I love taking pictures of my books out. And because I always go to the scene of the crime. Well, what happened there? See if this sounds familiar to you, folks. There's a woman who goes down a lake in a rowboat with her, the guy that got her pregnant, and she wants to marry him. And he's hesitant to do it. So they go out in the rowboat. Next thing you know, she's in the water, she drowns. Years later, okay, now that's 1906. In 1925, Theodore Dreiser writes a novel about this thing called An American Tragedy. Now, the name of the decedent is Grace Brown. A boyfriend is Chester Gillette. That later becomes the basis for the 1952 film A Place in the Sun, starring Monty Clift and Liz Taylor.
Yeah.
So, so this is a big murder case, and they try Gillette. They find him guilty. Okay, because they find him guilty. They do stuff. I go through it all in the book, but the prosecution brings in stuff that would have no probative value. They bring in. Oh man! Thank God this is House of Mystery. They bring in the fetus in a bottle of formaldehyde. They take it from the woman's body during the autopsy to influence the jury. And then finally, they convict Gillette, and he's going to go to the electric chair. What happens? Well, what nobody has ever written about, but I do, is this. The New York papers had assigned their reporters to go up there and cover it. New York Times, the Journal American, whatever. Including the New York Morning Telegraph, and the editor there decides he's going to assign his sports editor to cover it because he's had some experience with murders. Who's his sports editor? Bat Masterson. So Masterson goes, covers this case. He's there in the courtroom when Gillette is being tried, has his own opinions about what happened, and essentially, I believe, solves it. And I get into that in the book. And then what happens? he writes a headline for his column on the verdict. What's the headline? New Style Lynch Law in Upstate New York. The judge decides that he's in contempt of court for writing it, despite the First Amendment. Sends the cop, sends his sheriff down to New York to arrest Masterson and bring him back. And what happens is rather than take it all the way to the Supreme Court, Masterson pays a fine of $50. The point being, he had seen a lynch mob form outside the jail, where Chester Gillette was on trial, and the lynch mob formed. During jury verdict of the jury, deliberation. So the jury was scared if they didn't convict the guy, they'd be in trouble. So they convicted the guy. And here we have Bat Masterson exposing this. That's what's so incredible.
Wow. What made him transition from being a lawman and a sheriff and a successful one, and, the whole good scene he had going on, he was popular and all that, into going from Dodge City to New York and becoming a sports reporter? Like, how did that happen?
Well, there was one thing in between which they actually get into in one episode of the TV series, because I happened to be, watching it, and what happened was he winds up going to living in Denver in the 1880s, which is where he meets his wife, his future wife, but he winds up getting into boxing. What I didn't know is that a lot of these Old West lawmen wound up involved in boxing initially because they were the ones brought in to keep the peace. You know, they hired their guns. Nobody got shot, but, because of who they were. But so he got involved doing that, but he really found himself in love with the boxing profession. He really loved it, and he wound up writing in Dodge City before he left. He wound up founding a newspaper called the Vox Populi, and basically he was railing against people that didn't like him politically because he was the elected sheriff. But the point is, once he left Dodge City and he was in Denver, he got another job there as a columnist for a local publication. And then he traveled. Oh, it's really interesting. He traveled all over the world covering the major boxing matches of his time. And we're talking about from 1880s until the early 1920s. So he was there when Jack Johnson fought the Great White Hope, and then later on Jim Jeffries, and then when he fought Jess Willard. And Matheson writes about it all. I mean, he was just really into it.
So,
and he, yeah.
No, keep going.
No, that's it. No, he was just really, I know what I was going to mention. Here, because, you mentioned earlier about the TV series with people, you can't see the series on YouTube. it's copyrighted, folks. You can see clips, but I think they have two episodes. But the thing is, in his column, about Jack Johnson, who was the first black heavyweight champion of the world, Masterson doesn't write one pejorative word. Other columnists did that, not him. See, to him, everybody was the same. That's what got me. That's what really got me. That not only was everybody the same, but his real legacy was he always stood up for the underdog. I mean, it's just like the character, what we saw on TV. That's amazing, and it's amazing.
So he did that first article about the murder. So now you said he was involved in several more. How did that lead him into starting to report on murders or follow murders? Like, how did that happen?
No, great question. No, I'll tell you what happened. See, when he would write his regular column, his sports column, makes no difference what it would be about, whether it was, it was about covering a match or profiles of a boxer. He always would put in there.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
References to politics, other sports, things that were happening. That's the way this guy wrote. He always put that stuff in. And so after the trial of the century, actually what happened was they didn't, his editor didn't put him back into, well, he didn't put him back into working true crime. I forgot, I feel like Columbo. One more thing, which is that after he turns down the job that T.R. offers him as federal marshal for Oklahoma, right, what does T.R. do? He offers Masterson the job as the deputy federal marshal for the Southern District of New York, and he takes it. Because you don't have to be confirmed by the Senate, which means in the early part of the 20th century, New York City's marshal, deputy marshal, was Bat Masterson. Talk about crime. Nobody was going to do anything, and he was walking around with a gun. You know? I mean, he was a reporter at the same time, so, you know, we got a reporter with a gun.
So, Fred, just going back a little bit and changing tack slightly on the interview, I'm just curious. I've listened to you speak, and clearly you're very passionate about the book and the subject, and you've written so many books. So where did your interest come from? Because, you know, there's many subjects, it's quite varied. How do you get your interest in those subject areas?
How do I get my interest in a particular subject?
Yeah, how are you so passionate about each subject?
What a great question.
I've told you, I'm much better than Al.
Well, only somebody from Alabama would have that perspective. Now, Well, I'll tell you. Lately, oh boy. Well, first of all, when I'm writing about something, I always want to help people. Okay, I learned this a while back, which is whatever I write, I want it in some way to positively influence people. And that was sort of the way that I was taught. I went to USC's film school, and we always wanted to make movies that would influence people positively. And so with Masterson was different than anything else I've done, because this is something I should have done years and years and years ago. And I tend to think, in this case, well, this is House of Mystery. I can talk about this. I really think that there may have been some guiding force on the other side. And I really, I mean it.
I've got to question you on that bit now. You can't move on from there. So, okay, so what's your belief system? So if you think that if it might be a guiding force, what might that be?
Well, what I'm thinking is, I believe in reincarnation. I believe the soul never dies, and I've had flashbacks to a previous life, and I'm thinking that maybe in some way I lived back there when this guy was around. I don't know. I do find it rather fascinating. that you know, when you're a kid and you're watching these shows, it's the old, quote unquote, old West. You don't realize that some of these people are still alive.
Mm.
I mean, that's what got me. One of the reporters that worked with Masterson on this news, I mean, I was fascinated by that. On this newspaper, the Morning Telegraph in the teens, her name was Luella Parsons, and she became a Hollywood gossip columnist. And the other day, I'm looking at reruns of an old TV series, What's My Line, and she's one of the guests. I couldn't get over it.
Wow.
And she was a colleague of Bat Masterson's. So what I look for is, something where I feel like I can make some contribution. In this case, the fact that Masterson is a dreamer and he's on a U.S. stamp and he's an American legend, to me that says something about dreamers. He's an example. He's an example to people.
And how might you be an example to people? So clearly that's something that you admire in people, because you recognize it in others. So if I was to ask you the question of what is it that I might admire about you, your personality, your drive, whatever that might be, what would you say?
Al, this is tough.
She's the tough one on the crew, you know.
Well, I can tell you what it is. I believe in justice. I believe in justice for people. I believe I have a really strong belief in justice. That's the reason why I've covered the particular cases that I've covered in true crime. But I can tell you that in terms of what to admire about me, well, all I can tell you is my heroes growing up with a Lone Ranger and Tonto, and I still believe in everything that the Rangers stood for. And to some it may be a joke, but it really meant something. And what does he believe in? What does Tonto believe? Justice. And for everybody. And that's the funny thing, you're really getting into it. That's the funny thing. When I was watching these old episodes, boy, when I watch these old episodes, you know, you don't remember an episode. You remember the character. Well, what I didn't realize is that in every other episode, the Ranger is standing up for somebody from a minority. Mexican, Canadian, Indian, you name it. And I'm thinking, gee, I must have learned something from this.
And I guess, so there's another question now then. So if you you're passionate about justice and making sure that that's people are equal, it's equality, being fair, and you're an author. So did you have a role before you became an author that equated to your value base? So some people might say, well, I'm staunch in terms of social justice, so I'm going to become a police officer, for example. So have you had any other roles that would mirror your value base?
Did I have any other what?
Any other roles, any other jobs prior to going into being an author?
Yes, I was a university professor at a place called Hofstra University on Long Island, and then later at another school there, the New York Institute of Technology. And I always felt that was one of the reasons why I didn't become I didn't get tenure, Al. The reason I didn't get tenure is because I put the students first. You know, I felt the responsibility to every one of those students because their parents were paying a lot of money. But that's not the way it was with the other professors. You know, I would say that it was at least 50-50 that felt the responsibility to the university versus to the students first. So again, it's justice, you know.
And just going back to your belief system, and you mentioned reincarnation, but reincarnation can take very different forms, can't it? People have very different ideas about what reincarnation is and how we reincarnate. So I'm just curious as to what your beliefs are, Fred, if that's okay.
Well, I can tell you. You might get a kick out of this. When I was a very young man, I must have been about 20, I went to England for the first time, and I had dreams the nights leading up to it that I had died, that I was a soldier who died in a dance hall fire during World War II. It was very specific. And then when I was in London, and then I went sailing across the Sound or something, I looked at the white cliffs of Dover, and I still remember it. It was like, I've seen those before. I'm from Brooklyn. you know, so that's where it really hit me, you know, that something's going on here, you know, there is something else going on here, you know.
So do you believe that you're reincarnated and you keep coming back until you get things right and you've learned all the lessons?
Yeah.
Or do you think there is it's already planned for us, that we have to experience certain things before we can rest?
No, I don't know. I just feel that that the soul goes on, you know. I just feel the soul goes on. So in terms of, do you have to do something different in another life? No, that's not my belief. But then again, nobody's ever asked me that question, so I have to think about it.
Sorry. I just get interested in people rather than necessarily the work that they produce. So if you were going to write yourself as a character in one of your books, who would it be and why?
Oh, my. Al, you didn't prepare me for this.
Well, there you go.
A character in one of...
Yeah, so you're going to write a book and you're going to be the lead character. Who are you going to be and why?
I would say that if I was to write a book, well, I would definitely be a lawman, you know, with a gun in one of the books, because that's always what I wanted to be when I was growing up. And see, that's the funny thing is, at this point, I can't really, it's so hard to explain, but I'll just say it, okay? Yes, Masterson was this idol of mine, and I wanted to write the book. Well, it also happens, I'm working on it's a suspicious death of somebody who committed suicide, question being, was it deliberate or accidental? Who's this person? Well, and the guy's name is Nick Adams, and he played a character called Johnny Yuma the Rebel. And I happened to get friendly with his daughter, who asked me to investigate. So I think that for some reason I keep going back to my childhood, and, you know, it's yielding something. I don't, you know, it's certainly yielding a lot of pleasure.
So this book that you're writing, where you're going to be the star player, who's going to play you in the movie?
Oh my God, I won't go there. Yeah, that's it. No, I have no idea. No, I actually am in one of my books. Okay, I'm a character in my book Lobster Boy. I solve the murder and I put my life on the line, and I never, ever, you know, it's been optioned any number of times for a film, but I've never, ever thought about, gee, Fred, if they put you, if you're in the movie, who would you want to play you? I don't know anybody. Right now I don't, but
Brad Pitt.
The funny thing is, yeah, I don't know anybody now.
That's you.
But, funny, I'm dealing right now on another thing that I'm doing. It's called the Child Stars Cruise, and I organized it. And these are with people that, oh, I think some of people may remember them: Tony Dow and Jerry Mathers from Leave It to Beaver, and Kathy Garber from Family Affair, Paul Peterson from the Donna Reed Show and the Mickey Mouse Club, and Stan Livingston from My Three Sons. And the thing is, I'm going to be talking to them about doing stuff. You know, they direct, some of them directed, have their own production companies. We'll see. You know, Al knows how this stuff goes.
I don't know anything.
No, it's very little, in fairness, Fred. You're giving him far too much credit.
Yeah. So it's interesting. Why did you call the book The First Dreamer?
Great question. I that actually wasn't my, somebody else came up with the title, with the subtitle, and I said, It's right. Well, the reason I called the First Dreamer, because he is, as far as I know, he's the first known dreamer on a United States stamp. So that's the reason I decided to call it that. And it, because I, and I also, because I want to be able to help these dreamers. I mean, people buy the book, I believe it'll help dreamers, because it tells this story about these people that want to come to the United States and the problems that they can run into.
Well, so how did he get involved in the other murders? Like, you were mentioning other murders. How did that happen?
Oh, thanks, Al. Well, the first murder, was he was with his girlfriend, and he was a very young man. He was in his early 20s. And this other guy got jealous and wanted her and blah, 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 and burst in on him and the woman in the dance hall. And that's when this other guy fired hitting Masterson in his hip. And that's when Masterson shoots the guy. And he was an army corporal. And he kills him. That was number one. The next two guys are in Dodge City, where his brother takes a job as the marshal, deputy marshal, whereas Masterson is the sheriff. So you know how it is. It's Dodge City is a town in Ford County. So you've got, you know, it's like it's no difference between then and now. You know you can have marshals and sheriffs in the same place. Anyway, long story short, somebody shoots his brother and kills him, and he happens to come on the scene at the same time, and that's when he shoots the two guys that murdered his brother. And he shoots them in self-defense because they turn on him. And then the fourth guy is a guy who shoots, and this is all in the book, he wants to shoot the guy, the mayor of Dodge City, and he goes to the guy's house, and he shoots through the window, and instead of shooting him, he shoots the woman who's an entertainer, named Dora Han. She dies, and at that point, Dodge City's Marshal Wyatt Earp and Ford County Sheriff Pat Anderson put a posse together, and they tracked the bad guy down. His name is Spike Kennedy. Can't make up these names. And Masterson shoots him, wounds him in the shoulder, I think it is. But eventually, the guy dies from the wound. You know, because in those days, you know, when they it was very easy to get sepsis. So, but the guy eventually dies. And funny thing is, in the middle 1900s, by 1912. Mrs. is involved in a libel case in New York City. He sues the New York Journal American for libel for something that they printed something that a fight manager said about Masterson, that he made his reputation shooting Mexicans and Indians in the back, and he took exception to this. And during his cross-examination, he was asked about how many Indians he killed. And he goes, let me just explain, the guy doing the cross-examination, future Supreme Court Justice Benjamin Cardozo, he's representing the newspaper, and Masterson gets the better of him. And Masterson says under oath, "I don't know how many Indians I shot. If I didn't, I can't tell you. And if I didn't kill any of them, it's not my fault." He says this under oath, and so that's what he was. That's what happens after he gets involved in the trial of the century. This libel case happens. So he's still, you know, he's, even though, you know, again, it's the celebrity aspect of his life. It gets him involved in a lot of things. I'll tell you what cracked me up. And it's in the book. I found a picture of Masterson from about 1920. He's advertised, it's an ad where he's advertising an automatic handgun. I cracked up. You know, I couldn't get over it. But I can tell you this. If Masterson were around today, he would definitely be campaigning against the use of these semi-automatic and automatic weapons. He didn't like the idea of taking a life. He wasn't into it. He wasn't a killer. Earp was a killer. Okay, Earp was a killer. Some of the stuff you've seen about Earp, like in Tombstone, is accurate. But not this guy. Masterson wasn't a killer. He didn't like it. Didn't like it at all.
How did he end up dying, then?
Well, yeah. You know, they always say dying with your boots on, you know, that sort of thing. Well, what happens is, it's 1921. Masterson has diabetes, which has no treatment in those days, and goes to work, and he collapses at his desk, heart attack.
Hmm. Wow. So what was he? He must have been about 70 or something like that.
I knew you were going to ask that question. I'll tell you in a second. I'm trying to no. He was born in. Let's see. He was born in 51, 49 plus. no, 53. I got to get it right. 47, 57, 67. Yeah, he was close to 70. Yep.
Wow.
Which was pretty old in those days.
Pretty old in these days.
Pretty old. but also considering what his profession had been, it wasn't exactly a profession. You know, when the term gunfighter, Al, it's sort of, it's misunderstood. When you say gunfighter, what you mean is a hired gun. Yes, Masterson did hire out his gun at points, but not to kill anybody. It was more for protective purposes. He was more like, character called Paladin that I grew up with. Richard Boone, have gun, will travel.
Yeah.
He was a lot more like that.
Wow.
He was a lot more like that. He was a guy who didn't want to use the gun, but he didn't have a problem. Not only didn't he have a problem using it, he carried it his whole life. Even in New York City, he carried I think it was a .38.
Hmm. Well, Fred, it's another great interview wrapping up, and I guess the book will be available on Amazon and all good bookstores.
It's available on Amazon and also at RJ, the publisher is RJ Parker Publishing, so it's also available on his website, either one, and it's available as an ebook and as an imprint.
Fantastic. The book's Bat Masterson, The First Dreamer. Our guest has been the author, Fred Rosen. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, sir.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
The mission has been completed.
The end!
By George, he's got it! It is the end!
I'll see you.
If you're lying to me, I'll be back.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.